Pruitt v. Moat, Ms. Mackey.
May it please the Court, my name is Kathleen Mackey and I represent the appellant Benjamin Pruitt. The District Court abused its discretion in failing to appoint counsel to the appellant Benjamin Pruitt. Mr. Pruitt was functionally illiterate and orally incomprehensible, as a reading of the trial transcript and a reading of the record indicate. Mr. Pruitt failed to conduct any discovery and failed to locate two critical pieces of evidence, including a third-party witness to the alleged sexual assault and the investigation file into Mr. Pruitt's grievance, which included a statement from the alleged assailant, Michael Mesh. Finally, Mr. Pruitt, an alleged victim of a sexual assault, was made to confront his alleged assailant at his trial and to cross-examine him without all of this critical evidence. The standard applied in this case is clear. A threshold issue is whether Mr. Pruitt sought counsel. Here, the state has conceded that Mr. Pruitt sought but was unsuccessful in retaining counsel. Next, we must ask whether, given the difficulty of the case, Mr. Pruitt appeared competent to try a Section 1983 deliberate indifference case where the district court itself recognized that Mr. Pruitt's written advocacy was jumbled and difficult to decipher. Finally, we must ask whether the presence of counsel would have made a difference in this case, where the pro se litigant conducted no discovery and failed to locate the aforementioned key pieces of evidence. First, I would like to turn to the first factor, Mr. Pruitt's competence to try the Section 1983 deliberate indifference case. The district judge was aware of Mr. Pruitt's inability to present a comprehensive and literate case, as is evidenced by his decision on the motion to dismiss. The district court described Mr. Pruitt's complaint as, quote, jumbled and, quote, difficult to decipher. The district court also recognized that Mr. Pruitt had put into the record with his complaint several irrelevant exhibits, which he had attached to both the middle and to the end of his 60-page complaint. The only comprehensive and literate pleading filed in this case was one written for Mr. Pruitt by a, quote, law clerk at the prison, which should have been a red flag to the district court that Mr. Pruitt was not competent to try this case on his own. The issue before Mr. Pruitt was, first, cruel and unusual punishment by Officer Mesh, who he alleged had sexually assaulted him. There were also claims against certain prison officials, which involved the complex issue of deliberate indifference, which this court has held is too complex of an issue for a lay litigant. In this case, Mr. Pruitt, in any event, was not competent to understand the issue of deliberate indifference. In addition, he was hampered in his discovery efforts because he had been transferred from the prison where the alleged assault took place. This hampered his ability to collect evidence because he was not located.
He questioned Pruitt. Did he question the officers also?
No, Your Honor. Mr. Pruitt conducted the cross-examinations of the officer and the other defendants.
Cross-examination. Did the district judge ask questions of the defendants?
I do not believe that he did, Your Honor. I believe in this case...
Just of Pruitt.
Yes, he questioned Mr. Pruitt, and he also questioned the witnesses that Mr. Pruitt had brought forward.
Let me just ask you, it's actually rare to have, we see these in Feretta cases. If you're the plaintiff or the defendant, your own lawyer, do you ask questions of yourself or what? How is direct examination conducted when a party is his own lawyer?
I believe in most cases, Your Honor, the pro se plaintiff would give his own what is called a direct statement. In this case, it's called a direct statement.
What does that mean?
To be quite honest, Your Honor, I'm not sure. I've never seen one done. But in this case, Mr. Pruitt was not competent to give a so-called direct statement, and so the district court did take it upon himself to ask Mr. Pruitt questions about his testimony. Mr. Pruitt was taken through the events, but there were issues which I have raised in the opening brief and the reply brief that were not clarified by the court. For instance, Mr. Pruitt testified about an internal affairs investigation that he had never received word back on, and as we can see from the record, he did not have any discovery of this alleged investigation that had taken place. There was also testimony in the record that a counselor Ruskin, the grievance officer, had conducted an investigation and taken the statement of the alleged assailant, Officer Mesh. Mr. Pruitt was not in possession of this statement, which I believe we would all agree would be a critical piece of evidence when cross-examining the defendant. It was a prior statement of the defendant, and Mr. Pruitt did not have this when he was putting on his case at trial. And this brings me actually to my next point as to why Mr. Pruitt was not competent to try this case on his own. The testimony and evidence were in conflict. It was essentially Mr. Pruitt's word against Officer Mesh as to whether or not this incident took place on the record. But in fact, there was a third-party witness that Mr. Pruitt said walked in during the alleged assault. He described that man as a white officer, either a captain or a major. This man's testimony was not presented at trial. He was not, Mr. Pruitt, it is not clear if he tried to locate him or couldn't locate him, and in any event, the defendants did not present his testimony at trial. It would have been imperative for counsel to fully cross-examine the defendants on this testimony and also on the testimony of the alleged assailant. In such a case, effective cross-examination is critical. Finally, the district court failed to consider that Mr. Pruitt was a victim of a sexual assault and that he was made to cross-examine his alleged assailant and to give highly embarrassing and emotional testimony about what occurred in that bathroom.
Does he have any other proof than his own word?
Your Honor, actually he did. He testified that he wrote letters after the incident to several of the defendants.
No, so does he have any other proof? Anybody else saw it? Or anybody else was advised of it contemporaneously with the event or shortly thereafter?
Well, yes, Your Honor. As I mentioned, he testified that the, quote, white officer walked into the bathroom during the assault.
Did he file letters of complaint?
No, Your Honor. He did not. It is
Why?
Not clear.
Why didn't he?
I don't believe that he knew. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
If it happened as he said. Why didn't he file letters of complaint
to the
officials at the prison?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I misunderstood your question. He did file a grievance, at least one, and it is noted in the record that grievance was investigated. However, Mr. Pruitt never heard the results of that grievance. I'm sorry, he did hear the results, but it went up to, I believe he testified that it went to Springfield, and he did appeal it, but he did not receive the actual findings or the investigation file. In summary, this is not a case where Mr. Pruitt demonstrated a working knowledge of the legal process and counsel should have been appointed. I see, Your Honor, that my time has remained. I'd like to reserve the...
Ms. Mackey.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Assistant Attorney General Carl Ellis, appearing for the state defendants in this case, Officer Mesh, who was accused of sexually assaulting the plaintiff, Mr. Pruitt, in a washroom, and four other defendants who are employees of the Department of Corrections who are charged with responding to his complaints. Mr. Pruitt claimed not only was there an Eighth Amendment violation in him being sexually assaulted in the washroom, but that the other defendants showed deliberate indifference. Now, there's no doubt in this case, Your Honors, that a lawyer would have helped Mr. Pruitt.
I don't see how this person was capable of handling a jury trial.
Well, Your Honors, let me back up and mention that these...
How many cases have we had, or other courts have had, where a person was a prisoner was deemed competent to conduct the jury trial? Most of the cases we have involve, you know, they're cases that wash out at summary judgment. And what we say is that, well, you know, he didn't need a lawyer to create a genuine issue of material fact if there was one. But once it gets to the stage that he's given a jury trial, how on earth is he going to conduct it? So here he asked for a lawyer shortly after it was he knew he was going to have a jury trial. He asked for a lawyer again. At that point, shouldn't the judge have said, well, you're one of these unusual prisoners actually going to have a jury trial, so yeah, I guess you need a lawyer. A person like this, maybe an educated person, a disbarred lawyer, someone like that could handle a jury trial, but not this fellow.
Your Honor, the law of the Seventh Circuit has never been that you can per se say...
You're not answering my question.
I don't know how many...
We have previous cases in which someone was held to be competent actually to conduct a jury trial, as opposed to, you know, he was competent to raise a genuine issue of material fact if he could, and he couldn't, so what's the end of it?
Your Honors, I'm not sure. I think, I'm not certain. Johnson may be such a case, but I'm not positive. That's the recent case out of the circuit. If I'm wrong about that, I apologize. I agree, it's unusual. Most of these cases do get decided out on summary judgment. But the rule of law here is that Judge
How
Baker has...
a person like this, it's not a rule of law question. It's not a question about a rule of law. How can a person like this conduct a jury trial? Now, the only issue here, as Judge Coffey's question pointed out, does the jury believe him or does it believe the officers? You say that's easy. That's very difficult. That's very difficult to try to win a case like that. And it seems to me the least you need to win to have a shot at a case like that is a lawyer who will, you know, conduct a direct examination of you and cross-examine the defendants and you know, look for other witnesses. Without that, you're doomed. I mean, be realistic.
I think it's entirely possible.
A person like this could not win a jury trial.
Your Honor, respectfully, I
can't cross-examine people. How does he examine himself? Look, you have a situation, it creates a very bad impression on a jury when you have the judge questioning the plaintiff. Judge questions the plaintiff, doesn't question the defendants, if Ms. Mackey is correct. He didn't question the defendants, he questioned the plaintiff.
There was no one to question, Mr.
Yes, of course, but it looks as if, of course, it looks as if the judge is against him. Why is the judge asking questions of a plaintiff and not of the defendants? Must be he's, you know, suspicious, wants to get the truth out of this guy.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. This trial, in my view of the trial, is of Judge Baker showing Mr. Pruitt a great deal of respect and helping him make his case. He says at one point, Mr. Officer Mesh threatened me with a 1 and a 2, and that's why I went into the men's room. And Judge Baker holds up his hand. I assume he held up his hand or did something like that and said, wait a second. Tell the jury what a 1 and a 2 is. They don't understand this. And then Mr. Pruitt goes on and explains, well, that's assault and battery. Threatened.
The jury sees the judge questioning one party and not questioning the other. And of course, the judge sees Pruitt's inept efforts at cross-examination. I suppose the defendant's lawyers cross-examine Pruitt. And then the judge is in there asking Pruitt questions. The jury's going to say, well, yeah, the judge, he's trying to get to the bottom of this because, you know, you can't trust this guy Pruitt.
You could certainly read it that way, Your Honor, but I read it differently. I thought it came across as judge...
You read it differently. Were you there?
No, I was not.
Well, I don't think your reading is particularly authoritative then.
I think it's entirely reasonable to read the transcript, to view Judge...
Why weren't you there?
I'm an appellate attorney only, Your Honor.
Why isn't the trial lawyer arguing the case? We have some insight into what the trial was like. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Your Honor, Judge Baker has a great deal of discretion.
This is a joke. I can't see in what case you're going to have the prisoner held to be incompetent to represent himself because they say, look, it's not easy to handle a jury. Do you conduct jury trials?
No, Your Honor.
Would you feel comfortable to be thrown in and to do your first jury trial?
Not as an attorney, no, Your Honor.
No. And this guy, far from being he's not only not an attorney, He had no education.
But it's his own case, Your Honor. He can't speak.
He can't speak well.
My 11-year-old son can bring to
All right, your 11-year-old son probably do as good a job as Pruitt.
But there are times when he's, whether it's Mr. Pruitt or it's my son, bring me an incomprehensible story, and as a person responsible for listening and taking and understanding,
Can you imagine a case conducted by someone who is incomprehensible?
Mr. Pruitt is not incomprehensible, Your Honor. You can read this transcript and understand what he's saying, especially when Judge Baker interjects and says, hold on, slow down, explain this. By the time, at the end of the trial, this jury understood what it was that Mr. Pruitt... Because I understood it, Judge.
You weren't there.
I wasn't there, but I know what Mr. Pruitt's claim was based upon what was presented to the jury here. And it was not a great trial. Absolutely, we'll concede that Mr. Pruitt would have benefited tremendously from an attorney.
It would have benefited tremendously. Why isn't that enough?
Because it's not the test.
Why isn't it the test?
Your Honors have set up a different test.
You tell me what's wrong with a benefited tremendously test.
Your Honors, I would think it might be a good thing to give prisoners attorneys and to give anybody who doesn't have the resources an attorney. As an attorney, I think it would be a good thing.
So why don't we do that?
Because I
benefit tremendously.
It's not something that's a reasonable thing to do given
Why?
The cost.
Why is it unreasonable?
It's very expensive to do that.
No, it isn't, because as you say, virtually none of these cases get as far as a jury trial. What's so expensive about it?
It's not just the jury trial that's going to be the expense.
No, it's very different. Look, to create a genuine issue of material fact, you know, you submit an affidavit and so on, that's one thing. To conduct a jury trial, that's completely different. You can't conduct a jury trial. You could certainly file papers to oppose a motion for summary judgment. It's a special skill.
Is that an easier thing to do, though, Your Honor? Isn't the jury trial the easier thing to do? To say to people,
you couldn't do a jury trial.
I said I couldn't do it as a competent attorney, but I think I could take my case to a group of...
Because it's extremely difficult to conduct a jury trial. You've got to be quick on your feet. You have to know the rules of evidence. You don't have to know how to object, how to follow up on a question when you're cross-examining.
All of those things. Judge Baker gave Mr. Pruitt the assistance he needed.
Judge Baker, you said, didn't question the defendants.
He didn't question the defendants, but
He didn't help Pruitt cross-examine the defendants, did he?
There was no need to, Your Honors. They gave
You think Pruitt conducted a good cross-examination? Is that what you're saying?
Saying that...
Why didn't the judge help him cross-examine the defendants? It's so helpful.
Because I don't think there was a place to stick the lever to wedge the other side. Mr. Mesh's testimony was very straightforward. This event didn't happen. And my time is up, Your Honor. I'd just like to, if that's the one point I could make here, even if you think that the rule of law here or the test that is currently used is not appropriate for jury trials, the second part of the test looks to whether the outcome would have been different with an attorney. And whether it was me or whether it was Perry Mason.
Well, it's just a lying contest. How can you possibly know what the outcome would have been? These things happen in prison. There's nothing unbelievable about it. Naturally, the defendants are going to say it didn't happen. He's going to say it did happen. How can you say that? Well, you're going to count witnesses and say there are four of them and therefore, or five of them, whatever it is, and therefore, of course, he couldn't have won?
I'd just like to say one final thing, Your Honor, if I may.
Well, answer my question. What is it that makes you think, in a standard lying case, the plaintiff says X happened and the defendant says no, and there's no other evidence, how can you say that that's an inherently weak case?
I'm not saying it's an inherently weak case. I'm saying this jury is capable of listening to the what happened at the trial.
That's begging the question. You're saying even if he'd had a good lawyer, the case would have come out the same way. How can you say that?
Because I believe that's the conclusion I've come to.
What sense does that make? Look, think of it. Suppose he has an excellent lawyer, and the defendants have a good lawyer, and with skillful cross-examination and so on and so forth, and the plaintiff coached, you know, the way the lawyers coach these people, how could you possibly know what the outcome would be?
It's my sense, again, of reading this trial, and I am sorry, Your Honor, I wasn't there.
But it
was a straightforward case of
Mr. Pruitt. It wasn't straightforward. A case where you have that's a lying contest is not straightforward. If that's the only evidence, the jury just has to believe one person or another, and that's going to depend a lot on things like how well a witness is coached, how skillful the cross-examination is. Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Ellis. Ms. Mackey, how much time does she have? 2 minutes?
First, Judge Coffey, I would like to now answer your question because I believe I misunderstood it twice. I believe your question was whether the, quote, white officer filed any kind of letter or statement, and the answer to that question is that we simply do not know because we do not have the investigation file of Mr. Pruitt's grievance. So that is the answer to your question, and I do apologize for misunderstanding it. In addition, I would like to point out that in this case, we are not asking for a per se rule, and we are not asking for new law in this case. We are asking that the court apply the standard that is already in the record. And in this case, as counsel conceded, an attorney would have been tremendously helpful. And in that case, the presence of an attorney who would have been tremendously helpful would have altered the progression and outcome of the case. As this court has additionally recognized, the assistance of a judge at trial, while helpful, is frankly too little and too late. The most important time for assistance of counsel is actually during the discovery phase, where evidence must be procured. And it is in that area that the presence of an attorney would also have made a material difference in the progression and outcome of this case. All we are asking here is that Mr. Pruitt receive a fair shot. We ask that this court reverse the trial judge and find that he committed an abuse of discretion in failing to appoint counsel for Mr. Pruitt. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Mackin. You were appointed, were you not?
No, Your Honor.
You weren't. Okay, well, we thank you anyway.